On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Assembly wrapped up the spring session Thursday with Speaker Robin Voss saying it'll likely be the last floor session for the year. A bit of a roadmap as we talk with Democratic Representative Tip McGuire of Kenosha. We discuss the slate of election and voting bills sent to the governor's desk. Get reaction on his chamber approving funds to replace the state juvenile correctional facility, Lincoln Hills. How do you feel about building a replacement facility in Milwaukee County? What election bills do you want the governor to sign or veto? How would you characterize the work of lawmakers on both sides of the aisle in this session? 800-642-1234. Representative Tip McGuire, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you for having me, and good morning.
Good morning. So the House has concluded its work for the year. Speaker Voss saying Thursday was likely the last session day. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm hopeful that my colleagues on the Republican side of the aisle haven't concluded their session, since Governor Tony Evers has requested a special session to pass some of the relief that he's identified that we need as a state. As you recall from his State of the State, there is some tax relief and other programs, child care, and other things that he believes the state needs to address. And so I think that's certainly something that we should be coming back in a session to at least discuss and see whether those opportunities are something that we can pass.
What are the odds that a special session will come to pass?
I think pretty low. I think, as we've seen repeatedly from legislative Republicans, they'll refuse to take up the governor's special session. He's done this a number of times with issues that are important to the citizens of Wisconsin, and Republicans continue to just not move on them and gavel out.
Let's move on to Lincoln Hills. Your chamber unanimously passing a plan to replace Lincoln Hills at like the 11th hour. The assembly version goes back to the Senate before it goes to the governor in Joint Finance Committee for a full approval. How do you feel about the end product, this $42 million plan?
I think this is good. So I know it's been a long time coming for something like this, but it certainly is you know, something where there's been a lot of compromise and a lot of back and forth on the bill. I know, you know, Governor Evers has certainly been a leader on this issue for a long time. He was, I believe, originally on the commission looking into, or the task force looking into, Lincoln Hills. And he also had tried to address this issue with funding in his original budget that was at the time removed by legislative Republicans. But I'm glad to see that this issue is finally, you know, that everybody can come to the table and agree on a final product. And I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to help a lot of these juveniles, as well as their families, remain engaged and allow them to then hopefully proceed without recidivating or committing additional crimes.
I want to just probe a little bit further here, because notable that your two colleagues, Democrat Evan Goyke of Milwaukee and Republican Michael Shraw of Oshkosh, they worked across the aisle to create the original bill. Did you think that groundwork had an impact on getting this across the finish line?
Absolutely, 100%. I think that both Representative Shraw and Representative Goyke did incredible work on this bill. And I think, it should be this should be an example of how we can work together and how we can take the things that we're mutually concerned about, regardless of what your political perspective is, and use that as the basis of finding some compromise. I think this would be a better example of how we'd like to see the Capitol operate than, frankly, what we've been seeing since Scott Walker lost, and we saw, you know, obviously the removal of authority from the governor before he was even able to enter into office, and the refusal to take up his special sessions when he's called them, and the continual refusal to include some of these provisions in his state budgets. I think this instead, the Lincoln Hills is a better example of how we should be working together.
One more question here before we move on from Lincoln Hills. How do you feel about using Lincoln Hills and Irma as an adult prison?
I guess I haven't thought deeply about that. I'm not sure. You know, one of the things I do know is that I believe our prison population has been shrinking during the COVID-19 pandemic. And so I'm not certain that having a new adult space is necessary. But that's certainly something, you know, again, that I haven't looked at into too deeply. So it may be possible that it's necessary. But to my knowledge, it doesn't seem like that would be the first step I would take.
Talking with Tip McGuire, Democratic State Representative for Kenosha's 64th District. You can join in. What questions do you have for a state lawmaker from Kenosha? Does the increased partisanship in the Capitol concern you? Has it limited the debate on issues that are important to you? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's look at firearms liability. This bill that recently passed your chamber would prevent victims of gun violence from suing gun manufacturers, and supporters say it protects the industry from politically motivated lawsuits, calling it lawfare attacking the firearms industry. Do you see it that way?
No, I don't. I think, you know, when we look at some of the harms that have occurred for communities, you know, and the way that the gun manufacturers have been able to sort of push, a legal system that permits at times dangerous people to access firearms, I don't view it that way. And I note that this happened, about a week or just a few days after, you know, families received about $70 million in money from the Sandy Hook issue, from the settlement in that case. And I think that shows that there was some liability, obviously, from the gun manufacturers and others. And ultimately, it helped. I don't want to say make the victims whole, but the family of the victims, it helped them move on, and it helped hold those liable responsible.
It came a week after families of the victims killed in the Sandy Hook massacre had settled a multi-million-dollar lawsuit against Remington, the gun manufacturer. I want to look at your legislation trying to close a gun loophole that is related to the Kyle Rittenhouse case. The bill aims to clarify a state statute regarding the possession of a dangerous weapon by a person under 18. What problem does this bill solve?
Well, so, you know, currently there are restrictions on individuals under 18 and ultimately minors. From the state's perspective, from being able to possess certain firearms, but I don't want to quite call it a loophole, but sort of the exemption here was for long rifles, and that was for the purposes of hunting. And so we've clarified the law to say, certainly we don't want to inhibit on anybody's hunting ability, but we also don't want 15, 16, 17-year-olds, you know, wandering through our streets and our neighborhoods and nearby our schools with long rifles. Because, you know, functionally, that has the same impact as it would if they were using a handgun in the same circumstance, right? Like, we have a law that says we don't really want children walking around with handguns, you know, on our streets. And so why would we allow this exception for a long gun outside the context of hunting? So it certainly still permits hunting and upholds Wisconsin's long-term traditions of being able to enjoy our natural resources and our hunting community and our outdoor heritage, but it doesn't it no longer allows that exemption for long rifles in the city.
Let's bring on a call now. Jeremy is joining us from Racine. Jeremy, hi. You want to bring up the firearms liability?
My question is, where does it end? If we start suing or holding manufacturers liable for the usage of their products, even though we can debate the fundamentals of whether or not we need such a product in society, then where does it end with people who produce survival knives for people who go to the woods and use certain types of knives, but use them for not what their intended purpose is? Vehicles who are used to that hit people. Just recently in Waukesha, a gentleman drove through a parade. Are we going to hold the manufacturer of the vehicle liable for the what the perpetrator used their product for? It's a very slippery slope if we start holding manufacturers liable for people's own actions.
Representative McGuire, go ahead.
Yeah, so first of all, Jeremy, thank you, and I appreciate your thoughts on this. I guess the first thing I'll say is it isn't a new concept of liability that we're addressing. What the Republican legislators were attempting to do was create ultimately sort of an immunity from liability for certain manufacturers. Right now, every manufacturer, every I guess operator of sort of anything in the world has the possibility for liability under, you know, negligence standards or other standards. The question is whether the facts line up and say, yes, you were at least partially responsible, right? Mm-hmm. And so I don't think that what we're talking about is creating something new. We're allowing the existing legal system, which has sort of potential liability for virtually anybody who's operating in the world, to continue to exist rather than removing gun manufacturers from the same system that you and I operate in or that motor vehicle manufacturers operate in. So motor vehicle manufacturers wouldn't necessarily be liable for this man's actions in Waukesha. I don't think that that would make sense. But certainly if there's a failure on a vehicle that causes an accident, right, they would be liable. Now, under you know this Republican proposal, we would be presenting an immunity from liability for potential liability that they may have. And I fundamentally disagree with that. I think that we should be allowing our courts and our juries and individuals to be able to determine who is liable and ultimately who is responsible or at least negligent in certain actions.
Let's let's just pause there with Democratic Representative Tip McGuire of Kenosha discussing legislation he's worked to advance this session. Do you think the election and voting bills passed by Republicans will further election integrity or suppress the vote? One amendment the assembly passed would prohibit the use of private grants or donations to help run elections in the state. How do you feel about that? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a minute with Representative Tip McGuire here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Democratic Representative Tip McGuire as we discuss the latest action out of the Assembly, taking stock of the session as last Thursday was likely the last day of the session this year. What legislation did you want action on this session that made it through or was sidelined? 800-642-1234. Representative Tip McGuire of Kenosha with us for about nine more minutes. Let's turn to these election and voting bills. Republicans, they put together a website on their election and voting bills that says we're moving a strong package of election integrity bills designed to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. How would you characterize these bills?
I would say I disagree with their characterization of how this package of legislation looks. First of all, there are a number of pieces of these bills that ultimately make it harder for people to stay as registered voters. But the points that I think are most important are there are parts of these bills that I think lend themselves to corruption long term, and I'm going to identify them. So the first one is that they now allow these bills will or one of these bills will basically say that the rules and guidance or the guidance provided by the Wisconsin Elections Commission has to ultimately be approved of by the Joint Committee of Review of Administrative Rules. Now, that is a committee that is majority Republicans. So under this package, the WEC could issue guidance on anything, something very simple, something very complex. Either way, the JCRAR committee, led by Republicans, majority Republican committee, could say, we don't think that that is that qualifies as guidance. We think that that should be an administrative rule. So we want you to claw that back, reissue it as an administrative rule. And then when the Wisconsin Elections Commission reissues it as an administrative rule, the JCRAR committee, majority Republicans, can indefinitely object. They can block a rule from occurring in our state elections if they want under these bills. In addition, the Joint Committee on Finance, which has 12 Republicans on it versus 4 Democrats, can ultimately block various federal funds or other funding programs that would be assisting in the administration of our elections. I think what these bills ultimately do is they give Republicans more control over our elections, not that they give the people more control over our elections. This is not about integrity. This is about a single power, single political party exercising as much control over the electoral system as they can.
Do you think?
And I define that as corruption. That's what that is.
Do you think these bills remedy issues that were raised in the nonpartisan state audit of the 2020 election?
Well, I think the larger question about what this does, because I think there are ways that you can remedy issues while simultaneously doing things that aren't great. I mean, for example, one of these bills ultimately requires, I found this interesting, it requires that there be a Republican lawyer and a Democratic lawyer at the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which is such an absurd concept. It's hard to imagine having to argue against why we shouldn't have lawyers who base their identity on their partisanship advising our Elections Commission. And they're appointed by legislative leadership. So you have a lawyer at the Elections Commission advising the Elections Commission who gets his job from Republicans. And then on the flip side, you'd have the same thing for at the Elections Commission for a Democrat. That doesn't sound like we're getting good nonpartisan analysis. That doesn't sound like we're getting people who are respecting the law. That sounds like what they're trying to do is insert more partisanship into the Elections Commission, which I think is a recipe for disaster.
Talking with Tip McGuire, Democratic State Representative for Kenosha's 64th District. Let's go to Patrick in Viroqua. Hi, Patrick. Go ahead.
Well, good morning and another great show. Thank you. This is usually I try to do a question, but today we moved to Viroqua recently from out of town and went in to vote in the primary a couple weeks ago. And it is unbelievably difficult to get registered to vote. Your state driver's license is not enough ID to get you to vote. And I was lucky I had a checking account that had been changed over to the new address. But anyway, if the Republicans' strategy is to suppress the vote and make it harder to register and vote, they are doing a great job. I can't imagine people – I'm in a pretty good situation. For people that are poverty and don't have a driver's license, they're not going to get to vote.
Patrick, thank you for sharing your story. Wondering here, Representative McGuire, should lawmakers like yourselves have a greater say in the guidance of how elections are carried out in our state? Should you be able to give more guidance to the Wisconsin Elections Commission?
Well, no. I mean, I think the purpose of having independent elections commissions is so that people like me look. I don't apologize for this. I'm an elected official and one who's elected, you know, as a partisan. I run as a Democrat in every election cycle. And so having my perspective on it, I feel would be on how our elections are administered. I feel would and other people's, not just mine, but would be, you know, unduly influencing it. That's not how our elections are supposed to work. It's not supposed to be gamed for the outcomes of politicians. It's supposed to be so that people can have their voice heard and that people can determine what their leadership should look like for their state. And so allowing, you know, Republicans to be able to determine on Republican-controlled committees what the rules are for the state of Wisconsin is absurd. But it would be just as absurd if it was Democrat-controlled committees, right? I mean, there should not be one political party that determines the rules and guidance for how our elections work. In fact, as I said earlier, I think it's absurd that you would even be trying to force any partisan positions, whether they're equally one Democratic lawyer and one Republican lawyer, because then you're just unnecessarily forcing partisanship into the equation.
One more topic I want to bring up before we close. The Assembly approved a proposed constitutional amendment to change the control of federal funds in Wisconsin. And Majority Leader Jim Steinke said it's unconscionable not to have the legislature involved with how pandemic relief funds are spent. Why do you think lawmakers should have a say in directing the flow of these billions of dollars, of federal dollars, flowing into our state?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that I would note is during the COVID-19 pandemic, I forget exactly how many days it was that legislative Republicans refused to bring us back to the legislature to address the issues of Wisconsinites. Was it 7 months? Was it 6.5 months? I don't recall exactly. But during the middle of a pandemic, this legislature refused to meet, refused to come back together and meet. And so if you're wondering how we can have any faith that this legislature would have been able to allocate funds in a responsible manner quickly enough to be able to make sure that people had access to it, I think it's a real struggle to see how that would be possible. I mean, there have been funds that the Joint Finance Committee continues to not release to the public on other issues. I believe we had a tremendous delay in the release of several lawsuit settlements that came back to the state. Releasing those funds took quite a bit of time. There was money that the state had allocated for homelessness that the Joint Finance Committee refused to release for quite some time. And I haven't checked recently. They may still have not released it. And then on top of that, for 6.5 months or for 6 months or for however long that was, they refused to meet in the legislature to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic as it was going on. And I think it's good that Governor Evers was able to get this money out to the small businesses and the working families that need it. I think it's good that Governor Evers was able to help our communities and provide funding to them.
We're out of time. Representative Tip McGuire here on the Ideas Network.